Victoria Pendleton actually came to our selection just before the Worlds, and I didn't end up going to the Worlds in the end, so it was a really tough day for me. But if there was anyone there that really helped me in that situation, it was her. And originally on the day when I saw her, I was like, oh my God, I don't need any more pressure. I don't need Victoria Pendleton watching this if it's not going to go well. But actually, she was the best person that I spoke to on that day, and I spoke to a lot of people.
Track cyclist Millie Tanner has had a whirlwind last few years. The 24-year-old switched from swimming to cycling back in 2017 through UK Sport's talent transfer programme, Discover Your Power. A grueling process in itself, as you'll hear, but she hasn't looked back since. A bronze medal at the 2021 World Championships in the team sprint, a silver in the same event at the 2020 European Championships, as well as competing at the Commonwealth Games last year, are just some of those highlights, and showcase how much potential this young rider has. But as we know, sport is a roller coaster. There's highs, there's lows, and there are days where you really have to grind to get through. There's also the pressure of living up to some of the cycling greats that have come before. Think Jason and Laura Kenny, Chris Hoy, and many, many more. But cycling still retains that community feel, and when Millie faced her first big setback, not making the most recent team for the Worlds, it was another legend in Victoria Pendleton who provided the right advice at the right time. In this podcast interview, Millie openly takes us through her journey into cycling, from battling back from setbacks to initially feeling like she had to catch up after arriving in the sport relatively late. But she also takes us through some of the causes that are close to her heart and help lead her to joining the pioneering Unlocked program run by the Women's Sport Trust. From period poverty to body image and body positivity, these are just some of the things that Millie wants to use her voice to raise awareness of. In a world that is so dominated by social media and comparisons, they are messages that need to be heard. Millie also takes us through the influence that the military has in her life, as well as her aims in the future as she looks to fulfill her potential. Millie, a very warm welcome to the podcast, thanks so much for taking the time to join us on the show. How is everything? Because I mean, it's start of the year as we record, we're 21st of January. National Track Championships are coming up as well in the next week, but how is everything? I'm going to guess busy.
Yeah, it is really busy. We've done a lot of training. We didn't really get to kind of ease off at Christmas time. We went home, which was really nice. Our coach is Australian, so she wanted to go home for a nice chunk of time at home, and that was great for us. It meant we got a nice Christmas and New Year at home, which we don't normally always get. So yeah, really good. And then just carried on training. Now we're back on track, and yeah, got the National Track Champs next week, which is always a good race, and racing against, you know, your teammates, literally the people I live with. So you know them inside out, but yeah, it's always a good race. So I'm looking forward to it. So yeah, that's on Friday. So yeah.
Yeah, definitely Friday as we record. And obviously this airs after the championship, so people will know what's happened on and so forth. But I mean, with Christmas and New Year, not that long in the past, how does prep look? How are you feeling kind of in yourself? And I suppose with the rest of 2023 coming up as well.
Yeah, so I guess Nationals is a good way to kind of kick start, see how you're doing in kind of your race legs, I guess. You're still in that training mode, like everything's just getting in the bank and that winter training. So you know, there's a lot of fine tuning and a lot of speed to kind of find, but yeah, I think there's a good chunk of work that we've done. Like I said, we've got a new coach and we've done a lot of work kind of building that foundation. That was really key for her, so we've just worked really, really hard, and hopefully we can start to see that pay off in the races. And what we'll see in Nationals hopefully is a bit of that. And then we can look into the bigger races and hopefully, you know, yeah, like I say, make those fine tunes and tweak those things in training, or, you know, the psychology of going into a race, we can practice a few things. So yeah, I'm feeling good. I'm excited to get back racing again. I raced in Switzerland just before Christmas, and yeah, I was just really excited to get back racing again. So yeah, it'll be good to kind of start the year off with a race.
Yeah, absolutely. And then touching on like a couple of bits that you just mentioned there, and kind of the psychology of going into a race and training mode, is that kind of a way to describe sort of flipping from training mode into race mode or competing mode, if you like? And how is that kind of to gear up from one mindset into the other mindset, I suppose, back and forth as well?
Yeah, it's tricky. Like, I think you get into such a mindset of every training session you want to make worth it. And, you know, people say, you know, make every rev, every rep, every, you know, everything you do is, you know, it's got to have intent and it's got to have 100%. And, you know, I don't ever worry that I'm not going to give 100%. That's never something I've worried about, because that's not who I am. And that's not, that's never been a weakness of mine. But I think almost like the opposite is like, I tend to overthink things. And the biggest thing for me has been speaking to the psych about just like going in with a mindset of just, you know, just trusting yourself and you've put the work in and just let it happen. You know, one of my previous coaches, you know, once said to me, you can't force a performance on the day. It's either there or it's not. And you've got to just let it happen. And that was one of the best bits of advice I ever got, because I just had a race day where things didn't go to plan. And I think I was so nervous and so kind of rigid and just like, really wasn't up for relaxing into the race day. And ever since then, now I just think, right, it's either there or it isn't, and you know, you're gonna have to deal with that. But yeah, there's nothing you can do about it now. You've just got to let it happen. So yeah, I think it's about that, going into that mindset with racing, you've done the work and there's nothing else you can do.
Yeah, trusting in yourself. And so
exactly, yeah.
It's something I say quite regularly on this show, and I suppose in interviews that I do in general, particularly when sort of the mindset comes into it. Because it's all well and good kind of getting that advice, hearing that advice, but actually putting it into practice feels a very different thing. And whether it's something that kind of took a little bit of time for you to actually, because it's all well and good saying, okay, I trust myself, but actually like fully believing in it, if you know what I mean. I think it's quite a difficult process.
Yeah, and like anything, it's a skill and you've got to practice it. So you've got to have some races where you've got to like practice doing that, and it might not be a massive race, but then you've got the practice to then go into a Europeans or a Worlds or a Commonwealth Games or whatever, and you've done it at a Nationals or, you know, a Class One or something. So you've got to go through those processes, and it's not always going to work, you know, you've got to try different things. So it is a long process of getting to a point where you feel comfortable and you do have that confidence, but once you get there, obviously it then just helps you just get better and better. But yeah, it's I definitely would say it's a long process. So you've got to just stick it out and get work out what works for you, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll say that the mindset stuff comes up so often. I'm sure we'll delve into it a little bit later on as well. To go into your journey in sport, for people who don't know, that you transferred to cycling from swimming back in, I think, October 2017, but 2017 anyway, after coming through the UK Sport Talent Transfer Programme, Discover Your Power. Kind of two questions in one, really. Why swimming, first of all? Kind of how did you get into that sport? But yeah, how did that kind of that transfer program come about, the opportunity come about?
Yeah, so I guess swimming was just a classic, like a lot of people, just my parents wanted me to learn to swim. Me and my brother are only 18 months apart, and we just, you know, we just went to swimming because we just wanted to learn to swim. And then he kind of veered off into football and rugby, and that's what he loved. And I just thought, no, I actually really enjoy this. And I really liked it. I really liked the coaches. I really liked my friends. I just loved it. But it got to a point where because my brother was so sporty and so was I, and a lot with swimming is obviously early mornings and things like that, we weren't ever together as a family. You know, we come back from school, one of us would be going to one club, the other would be coming back. We'd never like spend any time together. So and my dad's in the military, so kind of boarding school was an option. So we kind of looked into that to be able to do the sport that we wanted to do, and to also have like a good education and be able to see each other and things like that. So that's how I kind of ended up going to Millfield and continuing with swimming. So we ended up doing that. And then basically when I was in my second to last year, an email kind of came around the school just asking about, like, basically talking about Discover Your Power. And kind of my initial reaction was just like, nah, that's not for me. You know, I'm really into swimming, and I just, well, actually, I thought I wouldn't be good enough. I really I think through the program they have massive pictures of Chris Hoy and Katie Marchant or Nichols, who, you know, are now a good friend of mine. And I guess what they're trying to do is inspire you. And obviously they're so inspirational that I thought, oh, I'll never be.
Was it daunting, so to speak?
Yeah, I was like, I just would never be like that. So it kind of had the opposite effect, really. And then my coach at training that night was like, oh, did you see that email? Like, maybe you should look into that. And at this point, and kind of we'd realized that I probably wasn't going to, the dream was go to the Olympics, and that wasn't really going to happen with swimming. I'd kind of make a final at the nationals, but, you know, the GB swimmers, they're always making podiums, and that was never really my, you know, I wasn't reaching that level. So my coach kind of recommended for me to give it a go, as I was like a pure sprinter and that's what they were looking for. And I really just did it for him. I was like, okay, well, he's told me to and I'll just do it, but I don't really think I have it. And over the course of a year, they basically whittled the numbers down from, you know, over the couple thousand applicants they had. And a year later, I was asked to join the program. So it is a bit of a crazy story. And when you think about it, it is, yeah, it's a bit mad, but I think you've got it. It's like the lottery. You've got to be in it to win it. And I guess at that point I was like, right, I'll give it a go, but you never know. And I guess someone's got to get through. And yeah, that's it really.
Yeah, it's the age old, if you don't go for it or don't apply, you'll never know the answer.
Exactly.
So to speak.
That's exactly what I say. Like, I say to people now, like, you've got absolutely nothing to lose and everything to gain. You know, there's so many things I've done now that I just couldn't have even imagined I would have done, and all because someone kind of gave me that nudge and was like, I think you should enter that. So yeah, super, super grateful. And yeah, it was a bit of a crazy journey when you think about it now, but yeah.
Yeah. What did it actually sort of involve in terms of like whittling you down, and I suppose what was expected of you throughout it as well?
Yeah. So they had a couple, I think they had like over 2000 applicants. And then I think it was almost like they had some form of criteria that they whittled it down to, I can't remember the number, but there was like phase one days where it was like initial testing. So it was things like 6 second peak power on a watt bike, 3 minute power test, jump as high as you can, jump as far as you can. Like really generic things you can't train for. And I remember I went with my dad and I was so nervous, and I just gave my best. And every time I came back one of those days, I never really knew what was going to happen, but I knew I just done my best and that was all I could do. And then basically they put all those results into like a database and send that off to the sports that kind of need people. And I think British Cycling basically cherry pick anyone that kind of hit near or around 1,000 watts, and I think I hit 1,100 or something. And so they were like, all right, okay, we'll kind of look into that. And then you come to the track for a weekend, I think it was, just to get used to the track. And I mean, seeing a velodrome for the first time, like I remember like it was yesterday. It was just such I'd never seen one before. I'd seen it a bit on the telly, but nothing really. And I just couldn't believe it. I was like, how do people ride on that? And I still get that feeling now sometimes when I go to new tracks. I'm like, oh my God, are we going to ride on that? And then, you know, 2 days later, I'm racing on it. But I got that feeling of, oh my God. And then after that, again, just did my best. I remember driving home from Manchester all the way back to Devon thinking, well, I don't know if I've done that. Don't know if I was the best. And I think I spoke to the coaches kind of a couple years later, and I was never someone that was at the top, but I was never someone at the bottom either. And I think that's what kind of kept me in. I was always in that middle range, and I just wanted to keep getting better, and I think that's what kept me in. And basically over the course of a year, they went from, I think it was like 50 girls for British Cycling, and then by the end it was 6 of us on the like 6 month just phase to kind of see how you work in an environment with a coach and training by yourself. And 2 were selected off the back of that. And I was one of them. So it took a long time. And in that final year, I was still at school. So I was still doing my A-levels. I was still swimming and I was trying to learn track cycling. So it was a really tough year. And Milfield, the school I was at, really helped me with that. You know, I don't think I would be here without that help. Yeah, it all just came together in the end. But yeah, it was a really tough process. Like, I would recommend it to anyone, but it's not for the faint-hearted. Like,
yeah,
tough, so
like you say, tough process. And mm-hmm. I mean, I remember back in March last year, I did a piece on Sarah Story's Skoda Academy,
mm-hmm.
and me being a journo who sits at his desk most of the time writing, was made to do some of those tests and promised to everybody they are tough.
Yeah.
You know, on the watt bike and 6 second peak power, 3 minutes, things like that, and I was dying by the end of it. So yeah. I can completely sympathize with just how tough those are, and to do it obviously multiple times and to go through such a year long's worth process to get selected. My next question was simply how tough, but yeah, you've kind of answered it there.
Honestly, it was tough, and I think I didn't realize how tough, because I think I thought, coming from swimming, you know, I've been through some pretty grueling sessions, you know, I'm up at 5 a.m, you know, what's the hardest it can be? But I think almost because in swimming it's predominantly aerobic based, I'd say, and then you kind of a little bit of a sprinter on the side, whereas with track cycling you're either a pure sprinter or you're pure endurance, and so the training is so much more specific and it can hurt you so much more as a sprinter. So yeah, the efforts were great to kind of see my potential, but also really, really kind of exposed me and how much training I needed to kind of progress. But yeah, I remember at the phase one, the 3 minute power test, which I've never done ever since, thankfully. But I remember there was sick buckets beside each watt bike. And it was almost like the guys were like trying to do some who can be sick the most to prove that they're going to push themselves that much. And, you know, they've worked so hard, and oh God, it was awful. But that's how hard it was. So yeah, it was proper tough. Yeah.
Doesn't that put it all into perspective?
Yeah, exactly.
The levels that we're talking about of pain and sort of how much you've actually got to put into this to make it a success.
But I remember that at the time, that like, that was such a, I'd never been sick in a session, but now it's like, you know, it's not an uncommon thing to see someone throwing up in a bin on the side after an effort. So I guess that was a good kind of awakening to what this sport could be. But yeah, I remember thinking that, God, like this is gonna be hard.
Yeah, absolutely. And has the swimming background kind of assisted in some way to that transition, or has it had to be like a complete almost transformation in you as an athlete to what you were before?
I think physically, I've always said, so I think in swimming I used to do the 53, which was like, I guess, the splash and dash, like the quickest event they've got. And by, my coach always used to be like, joke about how like by 20 second mark I'd be flagging, and he'd always say like, that one breath that you've got in a 53, like leave it to the last minute. And I'd always just wanted to like bring it forward and maybe even do a second one, which when you think about it now, I'm getting told off for breathing is crazy. But yeah, and whereas now my event is literally, I mean, it's less than 20 seconds. So it's so much more specific to what I'm good at and my like strength. So that kind of is better for me because it's so much better to where my strengths lie. But I think psychologically at the start, I thought swimming and doing swimming for so long compared to having done cycling since, I mean, pretty much out the womb, which is what a lot of cyclists are like, I saw it as a disadvantage for a long time. Like I really saw it as like, I've got to catch up and it's not something that's going to help me, the fact that I come from swimming.
Mm.
But actually, as I've got more experience in the sport and found my own way and found kind of where I fit in the program, I guess I've realized that actually that swimming and just a different perspective from different sports and is actually really helped me. You know, I'm not necessarily one of those people that wake up in the morning and think, oh my God, like I get to ride my bike. But I do think, oh my God, I'm so grateful for the opportunity to improve and get better. And it just so happens that that's on a bike and I love it and I do really enjoy it. I'm just not, I guess, a cyclist from like being a kid. So yeah, I guess it used to be seen as like I thought it was a little bit of a weakness, but now I think it's actually a strength. So
yeah. Is that always, it's so easy for people to fall into that trap of comparing yourself to to someone else or, you know, someone at work, whatever it might be. I think there's probably a lot of people who can relate to doing that in one way or another.
Yeah, yeah.
And is it almost kind of that acceptance as well, that everyone has their own path, and that just because you've got a different path to someone else who's also doing well doesn't necessarily mean your path is the wrong path?
Yeah,
and a big degree of acceptance of that.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think that's really hard, and I still struggle with that. I think because everyone has that different journey and different strengths and different ways to getting to a race, you know, some people peak quite early and hold on, some people literally comes just before the day. Like, it's so individual. And it's taken me a long time to realize that, but definitely a way to kind of, they always say, you know, enjoy the process, and you've got to trust the process. And the best way to do that is just to look at yourself. You can't compare yourself to other people, because then you just drive yourself crazy, you waste your own energy, and ultimately it's not good for performance. So I guess in some ways I've had to learn that the hard way, but it's a good lesson to learn. So yeah, 100%, I would recommend just, you know, focus on yourself and work out what it is that makes you like into the best position you can be, and that's all you can focus on, really.
Yeah, and you touched on it a little bit with, you know, that drive to better yourself each time, rather than, you know, waking up in the morning and thinking I get to ride my bike.
Yeah, yeah.
And what you mentioned before, when you were swimming and thinking I'm not going to get to the level that I want to in this sport, Olympics, major championships, that kind of thing, has that always been the driving factor, if you like, the underlying factor that's kept you pushing for more and more each time?
Oh, 100%. Like, I always, you know, if anyone said, oh, what do you want to be when you're older, I would have always said I want to be an athlete. And it's, I guess a lot of people in similar situations would have said, oh, I want to be a footballer, or I want to be a swimmer, or like, I never said I want to be a swimmer. At the time, that was the avenue that was allowing me to improve, and I loved the sport, you know, I really enjoyed it, and that was that avenue. But I think in the back of my head I knew I had the drive, like I had the commitment, but I just didn't have the talent. I think sometimes in sport that's just the way it is. So yeah, I was really lucky to be able to kind of throw myself into something else and have a program like Discover Your Power. But yeah, I've always wanted to go to the Olympics. You know, that's the ultimate of any athlete. And yeah, that's what kind of wakes me up in the morning, and that's what drives me. So that is ultimately what I'm going for. And that's always been the goal, yeah.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to be said for having that type of mentality as well. And it's certainly paid off when you list the achievements so far. And I think you touched on it as well, the bronze at the 2021 World Championships. In the team sprint, silver in the same event at the 2020 European Championships. And I imagine in the journey so far, those are some of the best highlights right now, but I don't think you're done there.
Yeah, I always say that, yeah. It's funny because on paper, they are the highlights, but there's been so many cool events, like Commonwealth Games last year. Like, on paper, I didn't bring home, you know, a medal or anything, but what I gained from that experience was huge. Like, a multi-sport event like that was amazing. So yeah, but equally, like, the Worlds, I had done hip surgery 4 months before, so that was a real experience. But yeah, to bring home the medal was more to prove the work I'd put in and that I deserved that spot. But it meant a lot because of what had kind of gone behind it. So yeah, they are definitely highlights. Yeah,
how's it been as well? Because you mentioned sort of really enjoying the community.
Yeah,
swimming side, you know, having your friends, your coach. Has it been sort of similar slotting yourself into the cycling side of things, where you're feeling part of that cycling community now as well?
Yeah, I think it definitely took a bit more time. I think swimming is such a community aspect. You know, things like the Arena League and like the club events and how you are as a team. I think because you're early mornings, you're going, you know, before and after school, there's such a family aspect to it. And I think in track cycling, maybe it's just because of the level that I joined in at, I think it is quite individual, and you've got to, you know, if you don't improve and you don't get better, like, there's only so many spots on the team, and like, you will be out of it. You know, I joined the team with one other girl, and within the year she was off the program because she wasn't making the standard that they wanted. So it's ruthless. And you are very aware of that on the team. I think you're constantly knowing that, you know, there's people coming up, and you've got to hit the standard of you know, British cycling's history and how good they are. You want to live up to that, and there is that pressure. But I think, you know, as a team, we've got a really good group now of women sprinters. There's about 8 of us, and which is really rare. But we've made a real conscious effort as a team, and like the Great British Cycling team have made a real push to create an environment where we can push each other, and we're in a really good place to kind of qualify a team sprint, which we haven't been able to do for the last couple of cycles, which has been a real blow. So yeah, we're in a really good place to kind of do that. And it's a really positive and what's the word? It's a really good environment to train in. You know, everyone's pushing each other, but in a nice way. You know, there's no nastiness. There's no, you know, like, I think sometimes in sport you can, the selections and things create that, I'm trying to find the word, like, it just creates an environment that you don't want to be in, and doesn't create the best performances and optimum training environment for everyone. So yeah, we're in a really great place at the moment where everyone's pushing each other and getting the best performances, and it's a nice place to be. So yeah, I absolutely love it, and I feel like I find that community back again. So yeah, it's been good.
Yeah, and is there that element that you kind of want to live up to what has come before? Because like you say, we've been lucky enough in this country over the last couple of decades, I suppose, to really watch a lot of outstanding talents bring success.
Yeah.
And you mentioned about it being like daunting in school, and obviously you're a different person now to what you were in school, but you know, you're trying to balance that dauntingness with wanting to live up to it and achieve it for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is quite scary, and when you think about it too much, it can get a bit overwhelming, because of the history of British cycling and the standard of what's come before you. But I think what's been great is that those, you know, here is the Chris Hoys, the Victoria Pendletons, the Jason Kennys, those I see at the track all the time. Well, I see Jason all the time because he's the coach now, but I see Chris quite a lot around races. And Victoria Pendleton actually came to our selection just before the Worlds, and I didn't end up going to the Worlds in the end, so it was a really tough day for me. But if there was anyone there that really helped me in that situation, it was her. And originally on the day when I saw her, I was like, oh my God, I don't need any more pressure. I don't need Victoria Pendleton watching this if it's not going to go well. But actually she was the best person that I spoke to on that day. And I spoke to a lot of people. And, you know, I said, oh, last year, you know, I got a bronze medal, and now I'm not even going to the Worlds. You know, that's a real turn of events I didn't see happening. And she was like, how old are you? And I was like, oh, I'm 23. And she was like, when I was 23, I've never even won a world champs, or no, I've never even been to a world champs or won a medal. And she was like, and then after that, I won 10. So don't worry about it. And it was the best thing she could have said, because it wasn't about, you know, like, oh, it's all going to be fine. Like, blah, 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 like trying to make me feel better right there. And then it was like, don't worry about it. Like, forget about it now, go and have a good time, and then come back, and you still got how many years in the sport. And yeah, so to have those people, I think it breaks that dauntingness of these people are unreachable, and because you've broken that when you speak to them on a day-to-day basis and they can communicate with you like a new normal human. They're not these like superhumans that kind of have done these unthinkable things that you can never do. Obviously it's still incredible and you think, oh my God, would I ever be able to do that? But I guess being able to speak to them, you realize that it's not as impossible as you once thought, I guess.
Yeah, and let's say it's so easy to put people on this pedestal,
rightly
deserve to be on.
Yeah,
but just being able to say things to you at the right time, the right advice, that must be so beneficial for everybody, just to have those kinds of figures around.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, like, I think you put them on this pedestal, and like, exactly, they deserve to be there. But for them to be able to kind of come off that and speak to you on a human level, they've been there, they've done that, you've literally used the same bikes that I'm on now, the same coaches, same mechanics, same track, to an extent similar training programs, and you know, they've done these amazing things. So it makes you just believe in yourself a little bit more, because you know, if they can do it, why can't I? And yeah, so to be able to have that experience of what the amazing things that they've done actually becomes less daunting and actually more inspiring and more achievable, I guess, the more you speak to them. So that's been a massive like impact that's created a massive impact, I guess.
Yeah. And I mean, and when you're thinking about trying to bounce back from that kind of disappointment, is it those kinds of words that you're kind of, I suppose, adding that fuel to the fire so you don't feel that way again?
100%. Like, I was in a really bad way. I was like, oh my God, I've put in all this work. This is not how I saw this year going. You know, thinking, have I done everything wrong? Have I lost what I once was? Or, you know, all these things. And for her to kind of put it in perspective and say, you know, you can have a bad month, year, like season, and come back, and for the next how many years you can be successful, and you can have those ups and downs. So yeah, and like a lot of people say that, you know, it's going to be fine, but I think coming from her, it just really meant a lot. And you know, she'd literally never met me before, and she didn't need to say that. You know, she wasn't being paid, she didn't need to be there, she didn't need to take the time to speak to me. So yeah, she did the offering back, and yeah, it really meant a lot to me at the time.
Yeah, and I say, I think there's a huge credit to people and athletes that do that, having had such success themselves, to take the time to really give that as words of advice that,
yeah,
you know, they probably had, who knows, at their time, and know that it's helped them and can help people in the future as well.
Absolutely.
And it's kind of tapping into sort of the motivation and the drive again and the determination. And so when you have a setback like that, and it can be so easy again, it's what I always, I suppose, describe as the difference between being a pro athlete and anyone else, really, is that just that ability to keep on going and keep on going and keep on going. And has that been, I suppose, not easy to keep pushing, because everyone has good days and bad days and in between days, but how has that been, just to keep that drive going, to improve, to better yourself still, even though you've had this happen in the past?
To be honest, it was my first real setback. And I remember our psych saying that to me, and he was like, well, this is the real first big setback you've had. And it was almost like him saying it was like accepting it, that it was there. And I think I thought, oh yeah, well, maybe I didn't make the Wells team, but it's fine. And he was like, no, this is like a really quite a big setback, and it's the first one you've had. And I was like, oh, right, okay. Like, I really had to accept it, and I really had to, yeah, understand that's what happened, because you almost go into this, oh, it's going to be fine, and just brush it under the carpet and just move on to the next thing. That's what all athletes do. But to kind of sit there and go, right, okay, I'm gonna have to watch the Worlds, you know, by myself on my sofa, was a real it was tough. But I think, yeah, I went through a phase where I wasn't, for 2 weeks, I had 2 weeks fully off, and then a week where I was kind of in the gym a little bit. But I spent those 2 weeks, I wasn't necessarily a full-time cyclist. I was just a fan of track cycling, and I watched the race. I remember I felt like I knew how hard the girls had worked, and I couldn't have been like more proud of them, because I'd literally been there every stage of like their training and everything. And they were in such good form, and I was so happy for them to just go out there and do what I knew they could do. And they absolutely smashed it. And I remember just watching it, and almost like there was no bitterness. There was no, like, obviously I wanted to be there, but I wasn't in the shape and I wasn't in the form that I needed to be at a world championship. So realistically, I didn't want to be there. I didn't want to be in front of the world cameras. I wasn't ready for that.
Yeah.
So actually it was really nice to go, these girls are ready for that. They're in the form of their lives. And I was really happy for them. So I was almost watching it as a fan, and in a way I was in a better position because I knew how hard they worked. So it was really nice to watch it in that sense. And then after that, I just wanted to go and have fun and go and do all these things I hadn't been able to do. You know, I'd come straight off the back of Commonwealth Games and gone straight really into training. So I never really had a summer or see any of my friends. So I went away with my sister to Greece, and I met loads of my friends and my family, and just did loads of things that I hadn't done. And they were like, everyone was so supportive. And I think because, well, you know, with social media, everyone sees you at all these races, and a lot of my friends and family had kind of just seen all these amazing races. And then to suddenly kind of say, no, look, like, I didn't make it. It was, you know, it's the first time that kind of happened, but everyone was so good. And I really just realized who was around for me, and like who took the time to kind of check in and who really cared. Which is difficult. And I think as an athlete, that's hard. Like, you realize that some people they're happy for you when you do really well, and they'll post you on your on their story and they'll say, oh yeah, I remember you in maths class or whatever, but they won't message you when you don't make the world, or you know, you don't have a great day or great season or whatever. So yeah, it's a realization, but that's sport and that's life. You know, you go through dips and troughs with everyone. So yeah, it was a big period. And then I came back and I remember I thought, most races you come back from, whether it's good or bad, and you're pretty motivated, you want to just get back into it. If it's gone really well, you can't wait to just keep getting even better. And if it's gone bad, you just want to fix it. But I was almost in the mindset of, I hadn't been to a race. I didn't get that big pinnacle end, even if it went bad or good. So I almost came back not as motivated as normal, but I was really wanting to just get back to being an athlete again. I loved being an athlete and I loved improving. So that's what I was motivated for. And then within a couple of weeks, that kind of, I came back to myself and I felt myself again. But yeah, it was definitely an interesting feeling to come back to training, because I almost felt a bit bad that I was walking into the gym and I wasn't thinking, I'm lifting that bar to hopefully lift an Olympic medal. I was thinking, I'm going to lift that bar because then I'm going to get fitter and I'm going to feel better and all these things. So that was different. But I think that's just realizing that athletes go through that, and you sometimes you're super, super motivated and all you can think about is a gold medal. And sometimes you're just doing it because that's, you know that in 6 months' time, you're going to thank yourself for it. So yeah, it was a new one for me, but I think you got to go through that sometimes.
Yeah. And do you think you're better for it?
Oh, 100%. Like, I've never been stronger in the gym. I've never been in a better place, I think, to kind of come into a season. And even though we're not quite seeing the results of it yet, because we're still in that block, hopefully we'll see it in 6 months' time, like I said. So, you know, like I say, and Carly's made this really good foundation, and I feel like that's what we've done. So yeah, I'm in a such a better place. And mentally, I feel like I had that real break and switch off. And so yeah, I'm not worried I'm going to burn out or anything, because I had that time to switch off.
Yeah, and I say, so it gets highlighted so often how important it is to turn your brain off from, you know, your main focus, just to have a break, like you say. It can do the world of good. Obviously, Paris 2024. I imagine it's a big goal for you.
Yeah.
In sort of the time from now to when it actually arrives, is there not so much like targets or like aims for yourself, or just things that you really want to work on, areas that you really want to work on yourself with your riding, that kind of thing?
Well, I guess, you know, so at the World Championships for us, all the cycling world champs, it's like a big, like a multi-sport event, which never normally happens. So you've got BMX, track cycling, road, I think mountain bike as well, is all in Glasgow in August. So it's a massive event. And that's massive for Olympic points. But also kind of our coaches kind of set out that whoever's selected for that team almost is like priority riders moving forward. So it's almost like you've kind of got to put your name in the hat to be in that Olympic team this summer. So it's a tricky, this season obviously is massively important and means a lot, because equally we want to get, even if, you know, that's not the set team, you can still make the team after that. But even, you know, whoever goes and whoever does ride, they need to get some serious points for us to make sure that we qualify for the Olympics. Mm-hmm. So there's massive pressure in that. So I guess it's just about putting myself in a place where I could be in that team. Like we said, you know, you can't predict the future and you can't stress about that right now. All you can do is day to day, just put the work in. I think that's what I'm doing now.
Yeah, one day at a time.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess for me, my goals is just to do that, is to focus on myself. I think that's been something that's really important, especially when we've got 8 girls like all pushing. And it's not like there's massive discrepancies between any of us. We're all working really, really hard, and we've all, you know, done something well to get to where we are. So it's not like there's massive differences. So yeah, just keep focused on myself, keep getting stronger, and just, yeah, keep putting that work in and try and have that belief, because it did knock my confidence last year. And I think just finding that again in races like nationals and, you know, the smaller races that we're doing, to gain that confidence to then take it into the bigger races again. So I guess, yeah, I guess that's my aim, is to just focus on myself and just keep putting the work in, really.
Yeah, like building those blocks bit by exactly. bit as every month, every day goes by.
Yeah, that's it.
Make sure you follow Sportspiel on social media. Search for Sportspiel Pod on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or on LinkedIn.
Going kind of a little bit more personal, looking at childhood and things like that and your life, and you kind of alluded to your dad there right at the start, and obviously his role in the military, and what did I see your brother also passed out last month, I think
yeah,
it was.
Yeah, he did.
So obviously like plays a big part in your life, sort of that military lifestyle. And I've seen you kind of mentioned that it's got its tough days, yeah. but it's got its great days as well. I imagine last month being one of those great days.
Yeah.
How has it been kind of growing up in that environment, and I imagine the way that's influenced you into the person that you are today?
Yeah, so I guess, you know, my dad's always been in the Marines. That's all I've ever known. And it's influenced me massively, I think. Well, from starters, you know, I was born in Devon, but as soon as I was born, so 6 months after, we moved to America for 4 years. So a lot of my kind of growing up and nursery and everything was in America. And then my dad pretty much spent that whole time out in Iraq. So that, I guess, shaped some aspects. And then we come back, I start school. I've got an American accent. I'm hating it because everyone's taking the mic and little things like that. And then kind of my dad's not, you know, he's not someone that's always at the school performances or the school plays or whatever, because he's working a lot and, you know, he's away a lot. And I guess as I started to get older, he wasn't doing as many tours and 6 month tours and things like that, but he still was really, really busy. And so, yeah, that was tough. But then, you know, on the flip side, I wouldn't have been able to go to boarding school and to compete in swimming and do all those, you know, incredible things that I am so thankful for without the military support. So the military kind of support their people, allowing the kids to kind of go to boarding school, and then I don't have to move around when my dad moves around. So my kind of education isn't interrupted, and that was massive because it enabled me to keep swimming, get, you know, the education that I want, that I needed, but allowed me to reach the highest level. You know, Milford's known for its sport, and that was incredible. You know, like I say, I wouldn't be here without it. But then also the military ethos and their values, especially the Marines. I think because I've lived such a military life, I guess, I hear it all the time. And so many of their ethos is massive in sport. You know, humility, laughing in the, like, what's this, laughing, my dad's gonna kill me now, it's something about laughing in the face of adversity, or something about coming over adversity, which obviously in sport is all the time. And just how, you know, their elite performance. And but we joke how in sport, obviously, you know, I know exactly when the world championships is, to, you know, to the second. I know when the race is going to start, I know the day, I know where I'm going to be, well, hopefully I'll be there, but where it's going to be. And you know all those things, whereas with the military, who knows when, you know, war is going to break out or whatever. So they practice, and that, you know, all their exercises and all their everything they do is under the worst conditions. You know, they're malnourished, they haven't slept, they've done everything they can to put them in the worst position, and they have no idea when they're going to be needed and when they need to be at their best. So they need to just practice when they're at their worst, and then everything else is a bonus. You know, all their military tests, you know, my brother, like I say, has just joined the Marines, and all their tests, their final tests, they do like the worst exercise they will ever do. So they're all in the worst position, and then they go and do all these tests. And, you know, from then on in their career, they know they can run 30 miles in 7 hours with all their kit, their weapon, everything, having done all these insane things, which put them in the worst place. Whereas with sport, it's almost the opposite. You know, you put yourself in, you know, you eat the best food, you sleep as much as you can, you train so specifically, you know, you've programmed it to the second. So I guess in some ways it's so different, but then in the other ways, like it has its similarities. So yeah, there's loads of things I've taken from it. But yeah, equally, I will never join. I've lived enough of it. So many people ask me if I would ever join, and no, absolutely not. I've lived.
Yeah, I was going to say whether there was any temptation, but I think you're pretty clear on that.
Nah, I'm not about the cold, the mud. I've lived enough of the military life. I don't, especially my brother joining now. Like, it's I've had enough, but I'm all right in the nice warm tracks. That's fine.
Yeah, and like you say, that plenty of crossovers and things like that. And has it always helped to have those kind of characters, your dad, your brother now, to lean on sometimes as well?
Yeah, it has actually. And I think they understand, well, I mean, the pressure for them, it literally can be life or death. So I think they get it, you know, even more, probably more, you know, the pressure for them is a lot more. But they understand that you've got to deliver and you have that pressure on your shoulders. Especially them being both officers, like, you know, the leadership is huge in their role. But also just like their emotional intelligence, especially my dad, like, he's literally won awards for his leadership, and it's inspiring. Like, it genuinely is. And I've taken so much from that, and how people speak about him. You know, I think within sport, everyone knows everyone, you know, there's connections everywhere. I'm sure you're the same, you know, you've got, you know, people in different sports. You know, I meet people that literally on the street, and they're like, well, I mentioned about the military, like, oh yeah, I know the Marines, I know Tana, like, and everyone has that like impression, and like they're like, oh yeah, he's a really, really nice guy, and like has such a lasting impression on people.
Yeah.
So I think I've taken that as well. Like, I want to be able to leave this sport with a good, like, people walk away and go, oh yeah, I met that girl, she was really nice, you know, we had a chat about this, that and the other, and leave that impression. I don't want to just leave the sport with nothing. You know, even, like, luckily I've got a few medals and things, but what's more important is how that impression you leave with people. And I think I learned that from my dad. So yeah, I guess that's probably one of the bigger things.
Yeah, I say there's so much to be said for that. Can you, it's kind of a big question, it's always a small question but a big question at the same time. Why is sport so important to you? And what does it mean to you?
I guess it means, it allows me to, I think my kind of why, I think a lot of people say, you know, what's your why? And I really thought about this. And I think for me, it's that ability to improve. And I've always said, like, I'm not a cyclist because I love bikes. I'm a cyclist because I love to improve and I love to get better. And it doesn't even need to be this time was quicker or, you know, something physical, lifted this heavier weight. It can genuinely be like psychologically, like, I feel like I've gone into the session better, or I've got a better relationship with this member of support staff. You know, we had this really good discussion. I just feel like I'm in a better place for tomorrow and for, you know, future me, the down the line. So I guess sport is that avenue for me to do that, which I guess is shown with the fact coming from swimming into the cycling, like, it's all about that improvement. So yeah, almost doesn't matter what it is, it's just improving.
Yeah, I again completely understand that. And yeah, talking about the community feel before, to me is such a big part of it too, for someone like me who will never be an elite athlete at all and probably never had the potential to be, but it's still given me my career to a certain extent. And just because of the people that you meet and the connections that you make, it's just so many, finding like your like-minded people around you and having them around you, I think just does so much for your own personal well-being, your own personal life as well. So imagine it's a similar sort of situation. And then talking of connections, you remember the Unlocked program, which we've mentioned quite a lot on this podcast because we are big fans of the Women's Sport Trust. And how has that been to kind of join something like that in what I think was it second year, third year, something like that, of the program going, and the opportunities that has presented to you at the same time to, like I say, not necessarily grow your racing any better, but just you as a person.
Yeah, so I joined just because I wanted to meet, so I spent a bit of time down at Bisham Abbey, which is like a rehab unit for Team GB. So, and at the time I had a surgery and then my physio was out in Tokyo. So I needed to go down to Bisham, and it was an amazing experience because every week you're with different athletes from different sports. And I met some really incredible people and had some amazing conversations just about how different national governing bodies deal with situations. You know, how does it work if you don't make the worlds, or how does it work if someone says this to the papers, or, you know, loads of different things. And it would, like I say, these conversations were amazing. And also just to be working with these people and to have those connections, like you said, is really cool. So anyway, I saw this opportunity and I just thought, God, like, that'd be amazing. So yeah, put, again, similar, like the Discover Your Power, it was one of those, I don't really know if I'm going to be good enough for this, but I'll just put my name in it and see what happens. And then, yeah, made it, and honestly made some incredible connections, like just made some real friends from the situation and had these conversations that I wanted. I wanted that again, where I was mixing with other people in elite sport. Because I think you can get caught up in just being within cycling. And actually to be able to talk to other athletes in other sports really opens your perspective, and to be able to support their careers and what they're doing outside and learn from them and all those kind of things was just really beneficial. So yeah, that's been great. And I honestly couldn't have even like faulted that program. It's literally incredible. You know, the women that run it, I absolutely loved it and love them. So yeah, I got not a bad word to say about it. I really, really enjoyed it. And hopefully, you know, I'll stay in contact with them for ages.
Yeah, and I say we're big fans of it, and lucky enough to go to their 10th birthday event, however many months ago it was. And you know, just to see that energy in the room of people who've been on the program, people just interested in the program, but just everyone, like, say, thinking in the same kind of lines. And I suppose appreciating that the wider impact sport can have, because that kind of brings me on to my next part, which is just those mini causes that individual athletes can have. And you've got a couple that are close to your heart, one being the Piri poverty, because I saw you obviously put your name as one of the athletes who were backing the Daily Mirror's campaign to end Piri poverty, the publication who I work for, so I'd better mention it. Why is stuff like that so important to you? Because I know there's the sort of the body image side of things as well, and just trying to promote those, I suppose, using your platform, so to speak, but just wanting to make things better for people in the long run.
Yeah, so I'm really lucky with British cycling that when you kind of come into Unlocked, a lot of it is about the discrepancies between male and female within your own sport. And within British cycling, you know, I'm really grateful to say that there is, you know, there isn't any, you know, there's no different treatment. Everyone's treated equally. And for me, it was never about gender discrepancy within my sport. For me, it was about young girls staying in sport as they get older. So it was, for me, my focus was always on that. And my mentor kind of, Emily Reynolds, part of the Youth Sport Trust, has kind of helped me with that and understanding why girls kind of drop out of sport and within schools and things like that. And she actually, through some of her surveys, has found that, you know, periods and the worries around that is one of the big reasons why a lot of kind of, I think it's like 14 to 17 year olds kind of drop out. And, you know, there's massive like drop of people participating in sport and kind of carrying on to uni. And my thoughts were kind of, once you get to uni, I don't know how much impact I can have. But if we can have an impact at 13, then hopefully we can kind of keep people in. So, yeah, I've done a lot of kind of looking into that. And that was where my kind of focus was. And also, I just think that's so important. You know, I never found my sport until 18. You know, I'd never seen a velodrome until I was 18. To suddenly then now say I've been to a Commonwealth Games and a World Championships in that sport is, you know, I wanted to go back to schools and just say, look, like, even if you're a bit worried about doing this sport right now, in 5 years' time, like, you could be in a completely different sport, feeling a completely different way, you know, in exactly the same body, but just with the correct sport support around you. And you know, these things happen. So I think that's where I wanted to kind of go into schools and explain my journey. And I guess around the periods thing, like, you know, 50% of the population have a period every single month, and suddenly, like, you just don't talk about it. And I think young girls need someone to just be like, it's fine, you're gonna be okay, and you can still do all these amazing things. And I'm not saying I'm going to be able to say that to everyone, but I'd love to be able to kind of help that situation, because I think it needs it. And it's really sad that young girls feel like they have to drop out for such a kind of common thing. So yeah, that's kind of where that came for me. And it was great to be part of a program like that.
Yeah, and I say wholeheartedly back that, and we touched on it with Amy Marcos in the first episode of the series as well, very much similar sort of lines. And I think it's great to see that we're having those discussions, or at least there's also coverage of those discussions as well, a lot more frequently, when you've got people like Dina Asher-Smith talking about it, and Leah Williamson recently talking about endometriosis as well. And just, I say, normalizing that, just bringing that conversation out a little bit. Is it something you can relate to as well, from sort of your own experience, and whether you felt you had enough knowledge, or whether it's something you've really had to invest in yourself, I suppose, and really educate yourself on that kind of lines? Or maybe there's an element of still trying to learn at the same time.
Yeah, I guess that for me, like, I've been really lucky. You know, when I've been on British Cycling, we've got, you know, fantastic support. And if we've ever got problems, we've got we've got two full, like, pretty much full-time doctors that we can speak to, and are really supportive. And the environment within the girls, we talk a lot about that. And that's never been, you know, if you have those issues, you know, it's an open environment to speak about it. So I've been lucky when I've been on British Cycling that if I've ever had problems, I've been able to speak to people and sort them out pretty quickly. But I guess before, I've also, again, I've been in a lucky situation. Like, I've always had good relationships with coaches where I feel like I can freely speak to them. And I think that's establishing that. So not only going into schools, but also, telling girls that, you know, you can do this and it's going to be fine, and you just need to kind of, this is what you can do about it. Also speaking to the support staff to be able to equip them in a space where they feel like they can talk to them. Because I think a lot of people want to help, but they don't really know what to say, so they don't say anything. And I think that seems to be a common theme.
A fear of making people uncomfortable, I often find. Exactly. You just dodge the topic altogether.
Yeah, you just don't say anything, which doesn't help anyone. I think, like I say, I've been lucky that I've had coaches where I feel like I can speak to them, or been in a position where, you know, I can go to doctors and things like that. But I know that that's not the situation for everybody. So I guess it's just about spreading that word and doing what we can to make people feel like there's someone they can speak to in schools. Like, that would be amazing.
Yeah, like, keeping girls and women in sports, which is something we've often talked about throughout the run of this show, because it's, you know, women's sport, and just fulfilling its potential is such a large part of it. Because think how many people have the talent, the potential to go do something, but it's another area that's kind of forcing them to leave that sport. And say, like, the body image thing as well is something that probably deserves to be talked about a lot more than it currently is. And I think we're only maybe just realizing the impacts of social media and things like that. And we were talking about comparing yourselves to other people here, there, and everywhere, and social media is probably a large part of that as well. Mm-hmm. And is that, again, that's something you can see when you're going into schools, you kind of see that impact on girls when they're looking on Instagram and things like that, and the expectation society has of you.
100%. So the reason I actually joined or kind of took the plunge to join Unlocked was because I was asked to do part of my friend's dissertation for her uni. Her uni dissertation was on kind of body image and how women were in sport. And she was using me as kind of the elite sport example. And she started off and she was like, well, I guess you're elite sport, so you don't really feel like any issues with body image. And she was like, so I'll ask you some of these questions, but obviously just like skim over them. And I was like, hold on, like, let's go back to that, because that's, you know, I'm in a lucky position where I can walk into a gym and I would never change my gym session just because, oh, there's someone on the bench press. I'm not going to just like sit there. Like, I feel like, how many more sets do you have? Or like, I don't feel worried that I could like play around with the machine or whatever. If I don't know how it works, like, I just ask someone. I don't feel that conscious of that. So I feel in that way, like I feel like I could, I feel confident within myself to walk into a gym, which I know a lot of girls don't. But from a social media perspective and a body image perspective, then definitely not in a position where I feel like I can tick that box and I'm absolutely fine. You know, there's definitely days where, you know, I spend my whole life trying to get stronger and build muscle, but then, you know, I leave training, I'm going out with a friend for a meal, and someone takes a picture and I'm like, oh, I don't know, do I look a bit too muscly? Do I look a bit, does that look a bit too much? And you think, oh God, like literally I spend my life trying to do this, but then I'm putting this picture on Instagram and I'm still going to have to live up to what everybody's perfect person on Instagram looks like. So that is really difficult to judge. And I'm confident enough to not feel like I have to change what I'm doing day to day to kind of please Instagram. But equally, I know that that's a massive part probably of why girls drop out, is because, you know, if you post a picture of you squatting loads in the gym, looking maybe a bit more muscly than normal, you might not get as many likes as if you're in a bikini on the beach looking really skinny. You know, I think that plays into it. So yeah, after this dissertation, and we had a really good discussion about a lot of the people that she'd already previously spoken to, were basically saying that at uni, they, a lot of the time they don't go in the gym because they think that people would judge them, or they don't want to get too big, or all these things. And I just couldn't believe it. So that was really what like gave me that last push to get involved in the locks, because I thought this has got to change. And also I think every single sport looks completely different. You know, in track cycling, there is no body type that is perfect. Or like the everyone's different. You know, you've got someone that's really, really tall, really lean, then you've got someone that's like 5 foot, can be really lean, can be not. You've literally got from like all the ends of the spectrum, and it all works, because in track cycling it's just about the power and power to weight. So, you know, you could be extremely powerful, and you know, you've got all these different examples. But with some sports, if you don't have a six pack and you're not like walking, like running 800 meters all the time, like you just think, oh wow, you know, you're not the typical athlete. But actually every single body type that's in a school, they've all got avenues they can go into sport. They just don't know it, and all they think is that an athlete is really, really lean, a six pack and abs, when actually, you know, no, actually your body type's really great for this. Or look at this basketball player, they look like this. This is what a hammer thrower looks like. This is what a cyclist looks like. You know, I feel like you've got to expose them to that, to then realize, oh okay, maybe I don't need to give up sport because I'm a bit bigger than the person next to me who looks like a runner. So yeah, it was all about that really. So that was kind of where I got my like last final push to kind of really push to that avenue.
And it's like, it's something I'm again wholeheartedly back. And is that the key bit, is that exposure of just normalizing everybody is, you know, great for stuff, it's, you know, worth it. There's no, as much as society and whoever might want to push that on people, there is no defined look. And it's just trying to reinforce that image. And whether that's, I suppose, the key to say getting people more comfortable and just accepting themselves.
100%, 100%. It's like, it's that exposure to it. And you know, that's partly why the, you know, the more women's sport we can get on TV, the more the girls are going to see it. You know, it's been great to see that the England netball's been on like televised, and that's been incredible. You know, I think the amount of girls that would have seen that, you know, I'm sure there's 6 foot girls walking around thinking, you know, I can't play sport, I'm too tall. And it's like, oh my God, no, you've got that thing that we really need for this sport. And you know, the more we can do that is great. So yeah, I think we just got to expose that. You know, one of the girls not through my program, but through a previous Unlocked, there's an Instagram page, Tip and Flip. You know, it's tipping and flipping, you know, the perspective on women's sport. And that has just been, you know, seeing things like that that are literally tipping and flipping what people see as women's sport. It's just been so good, and exactly the kind of things that I want to get involved with, because that's what women's sport needs.
Yeah, absolutely. From your perspective as well, it's ended up being a question that I ask relatively frequently, and just what people's relationship is with social media for themselves. Because I openly admit to people that mine is troublesome, to be honest. I have to work in it, so I have to be on it. But Facebook, as an example, I just don't use anymore because for what I see on there, it doesn't bring me anything. And yeah, I'm really picky about how I use my social media and not wanting it to kind of take over my life and things like that.
Yeah.
And so many people can fall into the trap again, comparing people's brilliant, amazing lives, because that's the perspective on social media, but can actually be very different to the reality. And whether your relationship is, whether you've managed to find that balance, because I know sometimes there are athletes who can get caught up in that as well and trying to portray the best possible image rather than acknowledging it, there's bad days as well, but you don't tend to see that as often.
Yeah, that was a really big thing actually that through the Unlock program I realized, is that we did a lot on social media. You know, we spoke to loads of different companies that had that kind of perspective. And I really took a look at my Instagram to how other people see it. And I think, you know, as you kind of grow up at school, it's Instagram's an avenue for you to just like show the cool parts of what you do. And I think I'd kind of kept that mindset up until then. I kind of really looked at it with cycling and things like that. And actually I realized I don't want to make my Instagram something that makes other people feel like their lives aren't as good. And I don't want this to become something where people follow me because they know me, or they, you know, met me or whatever, but they then, every time they see a post, it makes them feel worse or makes them feel like they're not doing something. So since last year when I joined, I've actually made a really conscious effort to, all my posts are things, either kind of races I've done and things I'm doing. You know, I'm not boasting about results. I'm just saying, oh, I really enjoyed going to Portugal. I learned a load of things and that was great. Or I've done kind of like monthly dumps, or just kind of like loads of different pictures. So there'll be some pictures taken by a really great photographer and get the angles and everything. And then there'll be some that are just me sat on the sofa with, you know, the dog or whatever. And I think just having that mix hopefully just clarifies that my day is quite boring when you think about it. A lot of the time I'm not doing all these cool things all the time, and hopefully just giving a bit of a reality check to that.
Yeah, that rounded picture.
Yeah, exactly, because I think that's what I want to see on other people's. You know, I want to see that the athlete I really look up to, you know, I really like Jazz Sawyer's Instagram. I really like hers. I think she's really good at just giving that real perspective on what an athlete's like. You know, I really like that in other people. So I've made a really conscious effort to do that. And also just be honest when, you know, if I've had a bad race, you know, I'm not going to write, oh, it was amazing. Yeah, like I'll say, oh, it wasn't a great race. You know, I flew all the way out to wherever and absolutely, you know, did not do great. And I'll be really honest with that, because then if there's an athlete that goes to a race, you know, and they're 15, they don't have a great race, you know, they know that it's okay because I did the exact same thing. So yeah, I've made a really conscious effort with that, because I would never want someone to be in that position. And then things like Twitter, I think I've really enjoyed that. Just the growing of women's sport within Twitter, I think is massive. I think on Instagram, it's still a little bit behind, because I think because it's pictures and videos and things, sometimes you can kind of clickbait it into, again, just an athlete with abs looking good, running or whatever, and then it seems to just get everything, and sport hasn't really caught up in that sense. Whereas I think on Twitter, there's a lot more, you know, the articles, everything's kind of stepping up, and I think that's a great place for women's sport. So I really enjoy that more on Twitter than Instagram. But then I guess Facebook, I'm similar to you. Like for me, Facebook, you know, I would never be friends with someone on Facebook that I wouldn't speak to in the street. That's kind of my rule. So like I get a lot of people request Facebook, you know, they've met, like that I have no idea who they are. I would, you know, that's for me is like the line.
Yeah.
Facebook's I guess like really close family and friends. I don't have that many people on it. I don't really use it, but like it's more for keeping in contact with people. So yeah, I guess I've got different uses out of all of them, but I try to keep it in check as well, because all of social media can kind of consume you, but if it's got its uses, I guess then it gets a bit better.
Yeah, I'd say I totally get where you're coming from, and for the Facebook thing, I'm like, if I don't bother posting life updates, because to me, if there's the people I want to know about my life updates, I'll just message them and I'll tell them, because they're the people I'm talking to anyway. So yeah, I think just having a rounded view of it all, I think just can be so beneficial, because like anybody, if you know a tweet goes viral, you know, and the likes kick in, and then it feels great and all, but I always wonder, you know, what does that actually do, particularly if you're younger and not quite used to it yet, and just building up these expectations and things like that. So yeah, so huge kudos to you for the work that you're doing in schools and talking about it, because I do think those conversations and just having them are just so vital for people growing up in a world that is still relatively new to a lot of us. It's still relatively alien. In terms of women's sport as well, and kind of, you know, you mentioned Twitter, and we're in such a fortunate position that it's in a really, really positive place now. Does it feel like that from your perspective, that, you know, seeing the netball on BBC, the rugby on BBC before, a lot more WSL coverage, things like that? And does it feel like you're getting to be part of something really quite special? But then this is only just the start of the journey too, and there's still a long way to go.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely that. I think it's going in exactly the right direction, but there's also a long way to go. But I think you've got to celebrate that step in the right direction. You know, at least it's a step. But yeah, like you said, like that coverage is massive, and I think the impact that it'll have, I think, is so overlooked. Like, it's gonna be huge, and it's gonna allow young people to really like get into sport and see it. So yeah, like I say, I think it is the start, and it definitely needs to get bigger, and I think it will. It's booming. Like, it's only going to get bigger. And I just hope that people get on board with that. I think sponsors are massive. I think we need to kind of like embrace that kind of it going massive and use it, and hopefully sponsors get on board with it, because I think, yeah, they're going to play a massive part. But yeah, like I say, it's going in the right direction, and I just hope that it keeps going like that.
Yeah, fingers crossed as well. And I say the potential is just absolutely massive.
Yeah.
Final question then for you. And just kind of, obviously, we've looked about sort of the bigger picture and Paris 2024 and bigger goals. But in terms of the immediate future and next steps, obviously, you mentioned the World's coming up in the summer as well. What does the next couple of 2, 3, 4 months look for you in terms of training, going around and about, racing, that kind of thing?
So we have, yeah, like, well, the nationals literally next week, and then there is kind of the World Cup or Nations Cup season. Teams haven't been decided yet, so we're not sure. It's kind of up in the air at the moment. So, you know, if I can get into one of those, the three of them, so hopefully if I can get on board with one of them, that would be great, a bit of race experience. But to be honest, for me, like I said, it's building this foundation and putting that work in. Just because there was a lot of racing last year, and we didn't quite get that really solid, consistent 6-month block, which I think makes all the difference. And especially with, you know, we found, you know, like I've said, like coming from swimming, any consistent massive block I can get is what I need, because I don't have that behind me from before. So if I can do that, I always find that that's when I've kind of really, you know, like got better and had those spikes. So hopefully I can just put that work in, and then by the time the World Championships come around, we're in a really good place. That's kind of my goal. I think it's maybe just a typical athlete answer, but yeah, just put the work in and just hope for the best. But yeah, that's honestly what's the plan, basically.
The typical athlete answer is very often the best answer.
Yeah.
So I think we'll forgive you for that. Thank you so much, Millie.
Okay.
For coming on. Really enjoyed that chat, and like I say, there's I think so many important messages in there when you talk about social media and body image and period poverty as well, and just so many things that I think that the conversation is now sparking, and the more that, you know, we develop that, the more that messages like yours get pushed to people, I think it only do good in the long run. And, you know, the next generation, the generation after that, are the ones who really get to benefit. And I think there's so much to be said for, I think you alluded to it before, like just leaving things better than where you found them. And if that's your mark on something, regardless of medals or what, then I think you're in a pretty good place. So huge kudos again to you for that. And thank you so much for coming on, and wish you all the very best of luck as well for 2023.
This has been amazing. Thank you so much for having me.
A huge thank you to Millie for taking time to speak with us and for sharing her story on this episode of Sportspiel. I'm sure everyone can agree that there were some really important messages in there that many can draw something from, and we really look forward to seeing her at a number of events in the future. If you enjoy the show, please subscribe on the podcast platform of your choice and leave a review. It helps us to grow and others to find us. And feel free to shout about it on social media. Again, it's how a podcast like ours can grow. You can also follow what we're up to on social media to get all the latest updates on the podcast. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and on Instagram, and all of our handles are at SportspielPod. My final plug is also to our newsletter, which you can subscribe to using the link in the show notes of this podcast. That's it for this week's episode, listeners. We'll be back next week with another feature interview for you. We'll see you then.